We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fellas, listen up. All you ever ask for is an opportunity. You got it today. Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
The Rock Pile Report with Buffalo Bills season ticket holder Drew Geer.
Be aggressive. You have literally nothing to lose. You're a borderline football team. If I don't keep laughing about this stuff, my teeth are going to turn around and devour my brain.
The Bills make me wanna.
Welcome everybody to another edition of the Rock Pile Report podcast. I'm your host, Bills season ticket holder Drew Geer. That's my producer, Chris Krueger. Deep breath, Chris. I know you hate it when I do these things. I watch you roll your eyes, and it brings me some joy to antagonize.
Nobody's going to know what you're talking about because they're not going to hear it because I'm cutting it out.
Because his production, folks, is top-notch. I love throwing wrenches into his... It's a petty thing that I love watching my producer suffer while trying to produce a quality-sounding podcast despite my vocal shenanigans. Guys, we've reached the end. The draft is over. The schedule's out. We talked about all this stuff, but we've got one petty little piece of business that I just can't let go. Because let's face it, that's our station. That's who we are when it comes to Bills content, right?
100%.
Hard-drinking, vindictive, ridiculous people that for some reason you guys can't get enough of. So I have a bone to pick with the mock draft community. And we brought in someone familiar with the practice to help us further the conversation. In a segment that I think may become an annual occurrence, our Mocking the Mocks 2021 with Pat Moran of the Talking Buffalo podcast. How are you doing tonight, sir?
What's going on, guys? How are you doing? I'm pretty well.
I'm doing well. You see, did you catch that on the video feed where you're watching us? Just Chris's utter disdain for the things that I do.
Yeah, he did. Right away. It took about 3 seconds for him to for that smile to be gone, man. That was kind of funny here on the video side. Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. Folks, those of you listening at home, you have no idea what I put Chris through on a weekly basis. I love every second of it. He deserves it. Don't feel sorry for him.
Yeah, our podcast sounds professional, but you're not professional.
Never have been, never will be. Pat Moran, host of the Talking Buffalo podcast, a football dad and wing ranker extraordinaire. And it's funny because his updated wing rankings recently came out over at moreanalytics.com. Before we jump into this, you know, all the schadenfreude over mock drafts, first of all, I know we talked a little bit about how you got into this practice last time. I took a look over your list and something jumped out to me. Sports City. I don't even know where this place is. In fact, the only time I've ever heard anything or seen anything about it was on your Twitter feed. What can you tell me about this place?
Well, first and foremost, I got to give credit to Sal Capaccio because I would not have went there were it not for him. I had never heard of the place before, and I grew up on the West Side. So, it's relatively new. I think it's been around for maybe 4 years. But first it was Sal Capaccio. I pay attention to people who talk about wing stuff all the time on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. And Sal mentioned something to me that the wings and the pizza were really good. And then Josh Reed from Channel 4 shared his sentiments and they brought guys there a few times. So when I was in Buffalo a handful of weeks or so ago, I said, well, you know what? My son was with me and I said, well, I'm going to try this place. And I drove past it And my first thoughts were like, eh. Because it doesn't look like, you know, it doesn't look like nothing much from the outside. And it's also on Niagara Street where construction's going on and, you know, parking is just absolutely horrendous. I got lucky, though. I did actually find a spot right in front. I can't imagine when it's busy how parking must be. And that's the way it is with a lot of things like in downtown and the west side of Buffalo and stuff like that. But I'll tell you, man, I walked in. I was like, whoa, I didn't expect this. I was blown away. This is a nice looking sports bar. TVs all over the place, really clean, very modern looking, and which that's all fine and dandy. And by the way, it's not a place where you go and have Coors Light or Bud Lights, which are my lane. It's a brewery where you go and get, you know, the good stuff. So I sat down and I got wings and two slices of pizza, and I'm just blown away, man. It's unbelievable.
I saw you tweet out a picture of Cajun wings. Now, here's the thing. Hot, medium, mild. If you're a pizzeria or a bar restaurant that has wings, if you can't execute those, you're probably out of business very quickly. But Cajun wings are hard because some places make them almost, it's just like straight pepper. Like if that's what you want to do, just call them pepper wings. There's not right. enough of the other Cajun flavors that really make it. So I saw you tweet out that you had had them. Are they worth me taking time to go down there and try them?
I think they are. I loved them, and I know what you're saying, and you're 100% right. I've had, quote-unquote, different types of Cajun seasoning wings where it is. It's just nothing but heavy pepper and salt, and to the point where it's overbearing.
Yeah.
You can't even really taste the wing anymore. I personally didn't think these were like that at all. I really liked them a lot. And it's not that they had the best wings. I mean, they were very good, and I think we had hot wings. Actually, we had medium wings, and they were very, very good. But the pizza was also very good. Of all the places, I would say, except for maybe that I've had, maybe Macy's, they have the best combination of wings and pizza of anywhere in Western New York. Like, I think Barbell and Elmo's, you know, they have the best wings, and there's some pizza places that only have great pizza. This place, whichever one you want, they had both. And what separated them from Macy's is Macy's is a little takeout place, you know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you can't eat.
If the three of us were to go sit down and eat, that's not going to happen there.
Oh, you can barely park there. You and me, right? You, me, and your son would have a hard time standing in the Macy's parking lot together, much less sitting down and eating there.
Now their food's good enough. I'll sit there in the parking lot and eat it and still enjoy it at Macy's. But yeah,
their food's
Sports City place. It was really.
This is just me being a snarky jerk.
I didn't expect it.
This is just me being a jerk. But Macy's place is their food is good if you want to wear a raincoat while you do it, because a pizza with pizza logs and onion rings and half a pound of jalapeno poppers, then you can keep all that. I don't need that. There's one thing, too, that stuck out to me about just wing rankings in general, and you're one of the people who seem to agree with, or at least my sentiments on this, or lean the way I do, and I need to pick your brain. Good Bar. Mr. Good Bar. I see people, I've been told personally by people, oh, Good Bar Wings, you gotta try it. It's the best, blah, 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 blah. When I think of the bar, the establishment, Mr. Good Bar, I think of them as Ying's Downtown. And by Ying's Downtown, what I mean is that it seems like it's kind of a dump, but not the charming dump. Like, hey, that's a older corner bar that everybody's been going to for 30 years and they just never bothered to change. Like the GBP in Lancaster. Not the nicest bar in the entire world, but it's I don't know what you want to call it, but it's like a established thing in the community. They don't have to update or change because they're still going to pack the place, right? It's a dive bar, but it knows it's a dive bar, and it does that really well. Good Bar is like Ying's Nightclub over on French Road, where you walk through the front door, like, the first thing that goes through your head is, I hope my shots are up to date, and then none of these weirdos start talking to me. So, in that way, there's no way in hell I'm buying wings from there.
You probably have a less chance of getting stabbed at Good Bar.
Probably. I'd say that's probably true. So in that way, though, I've become really frustrated with people who keep telling me to get my wings from this place. And yet when I look at your wing rankings, Good Bar comes in relatively low on the list. I mean, do you agree with me that this is probably a questionable place to prioritize for chicken wings?
Well, I went there because, well, for number one, when I think of Good Bar, I grew up on the West Side, and I think of being in college and underage drinking and being able to get in there.
So yeah.
I've been going there for a very, very long time. I heard a lot of people tell me the Wings were good. And I vividly actually remember this. It was a Saturday. I don't know how I remember this, but I remember this very well. I went there on a Saturday afternoon. It was, not last summer, two summers ago, because we sat on the patio. And the Wings, for whatever reason, were highly recommended. And I was really, really disappointed. I get what you're saying about the bar. I don't know the Yings comparison because I'm not familiar with that place.
Thank God.
Everything you said about Good Bar is true. I think its reputation is bigger than what it deserves.
Well, because everybody who likes to relive the glory days, when they're like, oh, I remember being here when I was in college. It's like when you run into an old, like a college girlfriend, and you're like, oh, man, I remember that girl. Like, we had such a good time together. She was hot, you know, all this stuff. And then you run into her when you're in your 30s and you see her and you're like, wow, time has not been kind. This is not as. And then you start talking to them and you realize that maybe that person isn't as cool as you thought they were. They're actually kind of a train wreck. Just you were on the same path, so you didn't notice. Like that.
Yeah, I think going in there when I was 18 or 19 was more memorable in a good way than going there when I'm in my 40s.
Now, this is hilarious.
The Wings were not good, though. I remember the Wings, and they were very, very disappointing. In fact, there's two places in particular when it comes to Wings that I was just recommended over and over and over again that I heard that they were good and just incredibly disappointed. One of them was Good Bar, and the other one was that place in North Tonawanda, Dwyer's? Dwyer's Irish Pub. Those are the two places that I still to this day remember as standouts for me that I was told these Wings going to be really good, and then when they came out, I was just like, they didn't do anything for me. Just being honest, man.
No, this is one of the so here, you know, we have a professional wing ranker here. We're talking to on the podcast. I have a group chat with Mark Smith,
our lawyer,
the lawyer for the Rock Pile Report, and Chris. Usually we use that to coordinate things for football Sundays. And since the season has ended, you know, we go back and forth. We have various conversations. Recently, Chris and Mark have decided that it's a good idea to flood our group chat with their chicken sandwich reviews. Yeah, the two of these idiots are comparing fast food chicken sandwiches and rating them and trying to apply like some kind of hierarchy to them. Chris, why? Why are you doing this to me?
Why not? The chicken sandwich, Chick-fil-A, obviously number one. They're the goat of chicken sandwiches.
Anyone could have told you that, though. I don't actually have to go eat Popeyes to know that Chick-fil-A is better.
Yeah, but then everybody else has a different 2, 3, 4, 5.
Who cares?
I care.
Who cares about fast food chicken sandwiches?
I care. I would put Zaxby's 2 and then Raising Cane's 3.
I don't know.
People up here don't know those. They probably see Zaxby's commercials on
TV. That's why he's so stupid, because
there's a Zaxby's 5 minutes from my house in Florida, by the way, and I absolutely love Zaxby's.
You guys are naming chicken sandwiches that people will never have, that I will never eat. What do I care about the power rankings of things, something I'm never going to eat?
Well, my girlfriend's dad.
My face is getting hot just looking at you.
My girlfriend's dad, he has his own rankings, and he has KFC number one.
Ooh.
Which is, KFC's like 5.
Well, I'll say this. All I know is that in my book, any sandwich that either one of you put in your mouths and it doesn't manage to choke you into unconsciousness gets a 0 in my book. That's it. Folks, if you want solid wing reviews, go check out moreanalytics.com. I feel like I've done it, Chris. I've warmed up the petty muscles. We've done a little workout here. I've gotten some digs in on both you, on some establishments that had nothing.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything to me. And yet I took my shots anyway, because I think I'm ready to dive into this draft conversation. First of all, Pat, your thoughts on the Bills 2021 draft class?
Well, my first thought was, and again, I'm being completely honest with you, my knee-jerk reaction was I absolutely hated it at first. Because I went into this draft, and as I look back now and I've had time to reflect on it, I've come around. But at the moment, at that time, I went into this draft thinking that I wanted one or two guys that were going to help them right now, immediately, and maybe be even that missing piece that would help put the Bills over the hump in the AFC, or whether it was Kansas City or wherever else might be there at the top. And my knee-jerk reaction was I didn't feel like that this draft really accomplished that. They took two defensive ends with their first two picks who And again, I did come around. I understand the value of these picks long term. But in terms of 2021, I'm like, there's your third or maybe even your fourth and fifth defensive ends with your first two picks as they come in, at least as rookies anyway. And then in rounds three, well, they didn't have a four. So in rounds three and five, you take two offensive tackles, which currently at this time, I felt and I still feel offensive tackle is one of the biggest strengths of this football team. I mean, they just re-signed Darrell Williams for 3 years, and Deion Dawkins has played very well. They signed him to an extension, so that position is shored up. So my knee-jerk reaction was I didn't like the draft at all. I came in thinking if they could go out and if they could get, whether it be a cornerback who could start as a rookie ahead of Levi Wallace, or maybe a wide receiver who could bring something different to the offense right now as a rookie, or the guy that we spent a lot of time talking about during this process, Travis Etienne. I went in the draft hoping that somebody like him could give this offense a different dynamic than what they currently have. That was my knee-jerk reaction. Again, as the process played out and I sat down and thought about it, it does make great sense because now you're talking years two, year three of the of these rookie deals. You're going to have two defensive end, potentially anyway, two defensive end starters, where if you take their money and you take the Spencer Brown's money and you add all three of them up, they're going to make less than Mario Addison's making this year.
Oh, for
so
sure.
This draft to me was more about, I mean, we should have saw it coming and taking Brandon Bean at his word. This draft was more about the long term than the short term. And that absolutely turned out to be true because when you look at this draft, it's completely about the big picture in the long term. So,
oh, absolutely. And I think
I called it underwhelming but practical.
See, and I think that you're like a lot of fans in that regard. A lot of fans felt turned off by this draft because they felt like it didn't do enough in the immediacy to help this football team go win a Super Bowl in 2021. And I think that there's also, I mean, I think that you could tell, even though Brandon Bean did throw it out there like, hey, our first pick in the first round, we're not thinking about 2021. He right. warned everybody. And you could tell by not only the disappointment in some fans, but also the mock drafts. The mock drafts that were put together, it's like almost like people didn't believe him when he said it. And so in that way, a lot of that shaded what these results turned out to be. Now, as all of you know, I think mock drafts are horrifically pointless. And here we are, talking about them again, because my pettiness outweighs my disdain for the practice. So in that way, we've declared this no longer hashtag draft season. It's now hashtag accountability season. First and foremost, I want to get a couple pieces of business out of the way before we dive into this so that there's no confusion. Participation in this exercise was completely and wholly involuntary. Okay? I didn't ask anybody, hey, do you want to be a part of this? You don't get a say. Do you want to know why? Because I feel like if people didn't want their mock draft scored and talked about, then you probably shouldn't have thrown them on the internet for public consumption. I mean, is that fair, Pat?
Yeah, that's fair. If you put your name to it, you put it out on Twitter or Facebook or anywhere on the internet, you got to own it afterwards, good or bad. Yeah, that's fair.
I kept this year's competition to just people who submitted written format mocks, published mocks. I mean, you podcasters, guys from the Circling the Wagons, the Cold Front Report, you guys are lucky that I have a kid and a full-time job, or I would have dragged you into this disaster too, okay? Kicking and screaming, you would have been a part of this. And for those of you listening at home, you might disagree with my methods and the science that I applied to this, which is kind of funny when you think about it because there is no science to the practice of mock drafting. But if you think you can do better, I encourage you to try because the results of this are pretty fun. Just to give you an idea of the breakdown of my scoring, here's the way the point structure lays out for this exercise. I took everybody's mocks. I broke it down into two categories, if you will, two divisions. People who just did the seven round mock where they just forecasted the Bills' original draft picks. And then I created a separate category for the full first round mock draft. People who tried to go from 1 to 32 and forecast all of the picks. It's kind of like the difference between the FCS and FBS and NCAA football. The point structure works like this in both brackets. Wherever you selected a player to go, whatever round you prognosticated a player would be drafted in, if you were spot on, so if you said Trevor Lawrence was the first overall pick, your score for that pick would be zero. If Trevor Lawrence had dropped to number two, you would get a score of one for that pick. And so on and so forth. Every draft slot that that player was taken away from where you prognosticated them, you were given one more point added to that pick's total. And then at the end, you were given a score. That score gets stacked up against everybody else's score, and we see who did great and who shit the bed. I mean, that all sounds pretty fair in what's ultimately an unfair kind of contest. Right, Pat?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I personally did not do an entire mock. But yeah, everything you said, it makes sense for scoring. And I'm interested in seeing how some of these guys did. And I'll let you because I'm looking at what I would have done in my mind. As you're talking, I'm thinking, all right, so I did not do a full mock. Myself and Aaron Quinn, we did six shows and we did a mock draft just for the Bills based on what the computer simulated for the other teams. Mm-hmm. But as I'm going through this list, because I'm looking at the first round picks, I'm looking and I'm like, I wouldn't have done well. So you'd be making a lot of fun of me right now. Had I put out a mock draft on Moranalytics.com like I do my wing rankings or something, you'd be having a field day with me.
Oh, I'd enjoy every second of it. Now, what he's not telling you folks is that he has in front of him an Excel spreadsheet with two tabs. I've got there. Folks, I don't half-ass things. It may be a half-ass exercise, but I whole-ass everything that I put my time into. So I have an entire breakdown of what? So just starting with the seven-round Bills mocks, I've got a charting of all the rounds, the picks, everyone involved, and then that scored. It's a complete breakdown with totals. It's the whole thing. Is this something you would have committed your free time to, Pat?
What you did?
Yeah.
Hell no. What you did? Well, actually, for the purpose of shame, maybe.
Maybe, right?
Maybe not to your extent, though. But yeah, I mean, you put a lot of work into this. I got the sheet open. I'm like, wow, man, this is a lot of work. This is literally a project that you partook in.
Absolutely.
You would wonder if was it Judge Mathis over at Buffalo Fanatics would have put this much work into it because...
You know, considering he thinks he's on my level in terms of petty. Yeah. We're actually going to have some point this summer, a petty off between he and I. Judge Landers from the Fanatics group is going to referee it. It's going to be a great time. You people are all at home. You maybe think you know, but you don't know the death. Just what a terrible person I can be. It's pretty great.
The only person I can think of that I know that would potentially... do something that is laid out like this, very well done, by the way, in spreadsheet format, is Joe Biscaglia. He's the only guy I could think of potentially that would do it, because Joe's a big spreadsheet guy, too.
But, Chris, look at this. Yeah. Look at it. Back-to-back weeks, I've gotten compared to Joe Biscaglia. I had Kent Lee Platy tell me that I'm smart and that my research was in-depth and insightful. Chris, are we turning over a leaf here?
Kent was just being nice.
So we start with the seven-round mocks. Now, this division was fun for a few reasons. First and foremost, because of the seven people that I scored, well, I think there's eight by the time it all was said and done. From the Fanatics crew to media members Dan Feet and the Democrat and Chronicle Sal Mariana, not a single person involved picked a player that was ultimately drafted by the Bills. Not a single one. You'd almost think that with that many, I mean, it almost makes me question how many of these would I have to aggregate before somebody got a pick right.
Well, if you would have added me, you would add me to the list of people who did not get a single Bill right either. So, I mean,
see?
Again, I can't smack talk anybody when I would have had that because I have my I should say, you know what? Aaron Quinn deserves half the blame for this too. It's not just me.
So. Oh, absolutely. And no, he deserves more
Aaron and I,
of
our
the blame.
Picks, we did a seventh round with Bill's picks only, and we ultimately didn't end up with anyone at the Bill Sugar. Although, to be fair, I think our draft's better than anyone's that I'm looking at.
Throwing a little shade of your own. So there were some interesting trends. So just to read off the list of people who were involved. Pierre, Bobby, and Rico from the Bills Fanatics, along with Judge Mathis from the Bills Guys, or now the Air Raid Hour podcast. Dan Feetz, Sal Mariana, and Greg Thompson from over at Cover One. So one of the trends that I noticed when I was looking at how these guys set up their mock drafts is that five of the seven took defensive players with that 30th pick. And the two who took offensive players, Dan Feats said an he's the only one that thought an offensive skill player made sense. Now, is somebody who in your own mock had a 7-8 said Travis Etienne would have been your guy. Does it surprise you that that many people thought that it should have been a defensive pick to begin with?
No. We ultimately went with Travis Etienne in our final mock, but I anticipated, that's what I was hoping for. And also, again, when we did ours, what was a little bit different is we did ours in real time, and we really didn't have any control whatsoever over the picks in front of us, and we literally would just find out just seconds before we ultimately had to make the pick. There were a couple defensive ends that I probably would have taken before him had they been there, which still would have ended up being the wrong picks. Well, actually, no. Let me take that back. They actually both were available when the Bills ended up picking in the real draft. Jason Owa and Joe Tyron were both available in the real draft, and we ended up passing over both of them for Travis Etienne. But I think generally speaking, I think people came into this draft expecting the Bills to take a defensive end. I think it's a little bit more of a surprise, or at least it was back on April 29th, a little more of a surprise that it was the guy himself, Gregory Rousseau, that they took. Because even beyond the guys that you have scored, because I know you kept score for guys who did a mock for all Bills picks. I know Marcel Louis-Jacques he's the only guy that I know of anyway, at least in the Buffalo media, that actually correctly picked Greg Rizzo in his, well, again, he only did the Bills pick for round one, so yep. He didn't do an entire draft. But I'm not that surprised that more people want defensive end.
So when I look at this, though, let's just get into this. Because we're here to talk about who finished where, right? Who won, who lost, who stinks at this and should quit. Sal Mariana. I give him credit for getting in on the act. I think this is one of the first times he's done anything with mock drafts. And he actually didn't do as poorly as I thought he might have. I mean, he finished in fourth place. And that's not me being ageist. I mean, he is the oldest guy of the group. But he's also a guy whose prime social media usage, from what I can tell, it just revolves around using Twitter to angrily live tweet every Yankees game. And to complain about the parking tickets he gets around downtown Rochester. Like that's so when I see that, I think to myself, I don't think this is a guy who really gets mock drafting, and I assume he's probably going to bomb. And he didn't. He finished in fourth, which is respectable out of seven guys, right?
Yeah, for sure. The bitter Twitter, Sal. And you know what's funny you say that about the Yankees, because I'm a Yankees fan, and you would think they've never won a game. If you just go by his Twitter, even when they win ugly. Like the Yankees won a game a couple nights ago, 3-1, and I would have thought they lost 11-0 the way he was tweeting. Yeah, but I would not have picked him to actually sit down and do a Bills mock draft. But yeah, I'm looking at. I'll tell you what, his first round pick is a guy that if I could do this draft over right now today, if the Bills were on the clock, and those first 29 picks went the way they did, I think he had Asante Samuel Jr. To this day, I'd be happy if the Bills would have taken him.
Well, and that's the thing. When you look at Greg Thompson's mock, Greg Thompson ended up being our winner with Dan Feats right behind him. And I know this because when I looked at their scores, I said, okay, here's what you're doing. Greg did an interesting thing where he traded the final two picks of the draft. And so I approached him about this and we talked about how it's difficult to score your nonsense here. What do you want me to do? And he and I actually worked out a formula that broke down how many wrong per pick. So broke it down to a points per pick average and then spread it out over seven picks. He ended up with a score of 153. And when I applied that same logic to some of the other guys, Dan Feats, he finished with a score of 187. Those are both pretty good when you factor in nobody else in the contest scored under 300. Pretty impressive, right?
It is. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I mean, and to their credit, both of them, I mean, one of them does sports professionally. The other one thinks he does sports professionally.
He was professionally representing the Bills at the draft on TV.
Yeah. Yeah. He's He's you know what? He can go ahead. I mean, with a haircut like that, I guess he can go ahead and try to be like, he makes for a nice headshot for Bills Mafia.
I was busting at Greg a little bit. I said, look, don't ever try to say you're not a Bills fan first and foremost when you're doing your podcast, when I'm watching you on TV going nuts in that little circle.
Which is
a good time for him, I'm sure.
I've saved those pictures, and that's anytime he's trying to be like, well, I have the ability to take a step back, I'm going to remind him of this. It's going to be great. Because, again, being petty means never letting anything go. One of my favorite things to come out of this seven-round mock draft was the Buffalo Fanatics group. Now, this is funny. Because when you look at the graphic that they put out on Twitter of their combined seven-pick Bills mocks, they call it the Founders Mock. And they do it every year. And when you look at it, Bobby B. and Pierre, two of the patriarchs of the Fanatics brand, have these little trophies next to their names for what I have to assume means that they won this exercise in the past. Is that, that's a fairly safe assumption, I think. Right, Chris?
Yep.
Okay.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
So when you go to look at Rico's picture, Rico has nothing, nada, zip, not a single win to his name. And that's why the results of actually scoring this are so funny, because Rico didn't just beat the other two of them. He blew them out of the water. It's not even close. Rico finished with a score of 304. Pierre finished with 343. Bobby finished with 463. I think that's the highest point. Like, I got this idea from another group of people who have done this, and that was the highest point total they'd ever heard of. So, Bobby, you're
do you
like,
think I could beat it?
You're like Neil Armstrong. You're the first man to land on 463 mock draft points.
Do you think I could beat that? We're going to do this next year, and I'm going to do it.
Chris, I don't know. We're going to, at the end of the show, we'll revisit this idea and we'll find out. But here's what I love, is that Rico won by default because he's the only one who didn't put an undrafted free agent player in his top 100. Like, you took undrafted players and stuck them in your top 100. You're going to lose every time. Bobby did it not once but twice, which I think helped him set the point total record for history. I mean, I reached out to him, right? I reached out to Rico, and I said, listen, man, you need to demand that, like Birdman once famously said, I think on Hot 97, that they put some damn respect on Rico's name and give him a damn trophy, because he embarrassed these guys this time around. I mean, it's painful to know that to this point he hasn't won, and he won this one by such a wide margin.
He did, and I like his draft too. I mean, I'm looking at it now. I'm looking at the perspective, like, kind of 50-50. Half of me is like in on what you're talking about, where we're being petty here and we're kind of blasting people who sucked at this. and then I'm also looking at the draft and saying, all right, man, and do I like their draft itself? And with Rico's, I don't know, maybe somebody helped him. So I'm just messing with you, Rico. No, but I like his draft. I mean, Schwartz got in the fourth round. He had him. Nasruddin in the third. Well, he went in the sixth. I think McDuffie, what's he got him in the fifth? Yeah, man. I would have taken Jason Noah. So if I'm looking at the quality of the mock draft you put out, I personally like it too.
And it's worth noting that in terms of picking the first round draft pick, he was only off by 1 point. He's the only person to come that close to correctly prognosticating the first round pick, which probably didn't hurt him either. But to your point, yeah, his draft is interesting in the sense that you would take that. Looking at it, if that was the draft, I'm sure the average fan would look at that and go, this helps us both now and in the future.
The fact that Bobby ended up with 463 points and he was only off by 2 points in the first round, that tells you how bad he was the rest of the draft, because Joe Tyron he had in the first round, he only went two picks after.
Yeah, so things, Bobby, if you're out there, Man, things really fell apart for you quick. Better luck next year. Better luck next year. And so I'm going to crack a fresh beer as we turn a page. And now I want to look at the first round mocks. Okay. When you look at this, this was an undertaking. It really was, because I had to take the entire first round as it was drafted. I pulled in the full first round mocks from Greg Thompson, Bruce Nolan, Matt Perino, Sal Capaccio. And then I said, you know what? I need to widen things a little bit. And I said, you know what I want to do is I want to go out and I want to get some people we know. So I pulled in Elf Arteaga from our AFC's Roundup podcast.
Three yards per carry.
He's a mainstay over there, and the draft is one of his key focuses. Like, that's something he prides himself on, his draft analysis. So I pulled in his mock. And then I said, you know what would help is if we got some national corollaries and pulled some national guys in to try to give some kind of comparison to how the Buffalo guys did. So I got Chris Sims and Ben Albright, two names that every football fan should know. And then, kind of on a lark, I said, okay, I see that there's this first-timer, this Jake Cranston, host of the Ending the Drought podcast that just recently started out here. It's relatively new. He's kind of a newcomer to this. And I thought it was interesting. Okay, here's a guy who just started content creation. Let's pull him in. And then I found Andy Anderson, who literally tweeted his mock draft. He's just a fan, a listener of Bruce Nolan's, who tweeted a mock draft at him. And I said, okay, this gives me a nice, healthy cross-section of the mock draft community. Okay, it's enough that it's manageable, but it's not so much that I can't score it, and it's not so little that I can't get a good feeling for mock drafts in general and how things might go. So when you look this over with me, there's some trends that I noted. Now, Brandon Bean made some comments pre-draft to Adam Schein that because of inconclusive medical evaluation, some players with flags that in the past might have been looked over in a draft like this not only might be downgraded, but could be removed from the team's board altogether. Well, GMs felt that way. Fans did not take that under a strong enough advisement. Some of the biggest anchors to our creators' scores were players that fell dramatically because of health concerns. And there was a few others who didn't fall as far as other people might have thought. I mean, Tevin Jenkins and his hip injury, I was shocked. Weren't you, to see Tevin Jenkins just plummeting down the draft board?
Yeah, for sure. He's one guy. Another one is Azeez Ojulari, was a defensive end that a lot of people had, not just amongst these guys that you have here that you've discussed, but I've seen a lot of other mock drafts too, where he was, in a lot of cases, maybe the second defensive end off the board. He went down, and also Landon Dickerson, I think, was another guy who would have been a first rounder for sure had it not been for some of these red flags. Then,
surprised he went as high in the second round as he did, though. Like, that was a guy that they were talking about potentially being available to the Bills in their second round pick. Meanwhile, JOK is what we're going to call him. He was taken by literally all but one of our full first round panelists, and he fell all the way to what, the late second?
Yeah, he lasted to pick 52. He went to Cleveland. He's one of those guys where we didn't even know about this until after the draft. Like, it was under the radar kind of red flag deals with his heart. I didn't know about that. I didn't hear anything about that. I don't think most people did, because I think, again, in the scoring that you have amongst these guys, and I'm sure many others that you don't. He was a universal top half of the first round pick going
in. Sure.
In fact, I was on your show a handful of weeks ago before the draft, and I really didn't consider him for the Bills because, honestly, I never thought for a second he'd even be there.
Meanwhile, the guy who's just a walking injury report, Caleb Farley, he somehow goes 22. He somehow comes off the board with the 22nd overall pick, even though the dude hasn't played in a year and he's had nothing but surgeries. Surgery after surgery after surgery. So that obviously threw a wrench into some things, but it was interesting how people didn't take enough credence of the idea that, hey, players with injuries, GMs could cool right down on them.
Yeah. And then, it only takes one, though. It only takes one.
That's it. And then what I noticed in everybody's mock draft who was involved in this, the back 13 picks seem to be the ones that tanked the people who sucked the hardest, which checks out, I think. I mean, Mac Jones was the only player picked in the top 10 by anybody who netted them a double-digit point total. That's it.
Yeah.
He was the only one for any of our participants. I think that underscores for everybody here that all of this drama people try to incorporate at the top of the draft, it's almost pretty much a foregone conclusion to anybody who's paid us any kind of attention. Who's getting drafted within, like, you know, Kyle Pitts is probably too good of a prospect for Atlanta to pass up. So most people put him at 4. And sure enough, that's the way it played out. I mean, I just don't understand why bother hyping the top of the draft up so much when really it's everything that seems to happen after like pick 20 that really changes the course of the draft.
Yeah, injuries for sure. Guys slide down, and when they do slide, like if you're projected to be a top 20 pick and it ends up being injuries while you're not, it's not usually, with Farley being the exception, of course, usually you slide from 20 into the 30s or 40s, or in the case of JOK, even into the 50s. So that's where the points in your system can add up really quick. And also a guy that you discussed, which I completely and utterly agree with you, Trevin Jenkins, I think he really hurt a couple guys' point totals too, falling as far as he did. I definitely did not see that coming.
So when we look at the results of this, now that we've talked about it enough, the final results, Chris, I almost wish we had a drum roll drop to throw in here. The national corollaries. Now, in order to set a baseline expectation for how our local guys did, I pulled those national pundits in, and the results were somewhat surprising. Ben Albright. Now, Ben's one of the better social media follows out there for sports information. I mean, he's well-read, he takes pride in his craft, and he dunks all over that nut job, Dan Saleo. Whenever that guy, I mean, recently, like pre-draft, he was using himself as a source. He would say something and then say something cockamamie on his radio show, and then later in the afternoon, turn around and say, according to sources, this got said, just to get social media attention. But the source was literally him a few hours earlier, just blowing smoke out his ass. And Ben Albright has no problem getting off the couch and just dunking all over this idiot, which is a level of petty because they had taken professional shots at each other. You know, he took a professional shot at Ben Albright, and Albright's never let it go. Like, he ignores him, but the second he finds an opportunity to dig in on him, he absolutely will. And that is something we here at the Rock Pile Report embrace. He had just 4 selections in the whole process that earned him double-digit points, and he finished with the lowest score of 170. Okay, which isn't bad at all, but because he's a national guy, I almost assume he should do better than everybody else, right?
Yeah, I would say so, but looking at his numbers, it's really 2 guys. So he finished with 170, and 64 of those 170, which is more than a third, are because of 2 guys, JOK and Ajulari, who fell. Again, I think.
And again, those are guys that everyone was pretty much in agreement pre-draft should be first-round draft picks.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So you don't fault his process at all. In fact, I'd say he did one of the best jobs you could have. On the other hand, you have NBC's Chris Sims, that for as good as Ben did, he did just as poorly. But should we be surprised? I mean, his final score was 200. Well, where did he finish? 270. Now, this is the guy who once said that all time, Drew Brees finished, 10th? They were doing like a where does Drew Brees rank all time as far as being a quarterback in the NFL. And they said that he ranked 10th behind Roger Staubach. And it's like, I know what you're doing. I see what you're doing, but also that's dumb. I just don't agree. Like, it's not going to, behind Terry Bradshaw. You have him behind Bradshaw and Staubach. You're an idiot.
Yeah, come on, man.
Stop it.
Right.
I mean, his final score made a lot of our local guys look like rock stars. And in terms of local mock drafts, that brings us to the crux of this exercise. Our Buffalo Bills-centric producers of mock drafts. Now, before we give you the winner and loser, let's take a look at how the rest of our group fared. First of all, Elf Arteaga, host of the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast, he finished with 216, which was surprising. Not because he had a bad score, but if, like you said about Ben Albright, if it wasn't for him picking Christian Barmore and Jalen Mayfield in the first round, He would have beaten Albright because those two combined for 69 of his total points. I mean, he could have hit as low as a 157. So I'll drink to that, Elf. You did a nice job. Not that far behind are two men who couldn't be at more opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of hair game, Sal Capaccio and Matt Perino, who tied at 199. I mean, what, Chris, 199 is respectable in this, right?
Yeah.
Now that you've seen the scores, you see how all the data's laid out.
Yeah.
That's respectable.
Mean, yeah, if, you know, I would assume for if Perino is near the top, if he won this, I would assume you would have paid for his next haircut.
Maybe. Maybe I would have paid for his next haircut. I would have offered to do something nice for him. But that's not the way it shook out. In terms of podcasters, I was a little surprised. I mean, Elf badly botched two picks and ended up at 216. While Bill's fan favorite podcaster, Bruce Nolan, only edged him out by a single point with 215, despite not having any one glaring miss like Mayfield. Chris, you love Bruce. You enjoy his podcast a lot.
Yeah, I listen to it when I can on the weekends.
Did you expect him to do better than just average in all this?
I mean, he's not... he doesn't get paid for this, but, you know, he did his best. One bad. I didn't even look at his mock draft.
Yeah, I know. Maybe we can convince him to sing a song about it sometime.
Are you good? Yeah.
I've heard him say, I know what you're talking about. That's why I'm laughing. I have heard him singing on, and rapping before, too.
Chris loves his musical podcast.
Well, he used Sir Mix-a-Lot lyrics to describe Russo. He said he was long and he's strong and he's down to get the friction on. And he said it in such an analytical way.
Yeah, I could.
I hate you so much.
See, well, you know, the thing about Bruce, too, is he's the only one of anybody in this exercise, whether it was podcasters, local, national, whatever. He actually started out on fire. He got the first seven picks right. He's the only one who did that. It all went to hell for him starting around a little past the midway point of round one, starting with pick 18. He took Tevin Jenkins, which was 22 off, and then JOK, which was 34. And yeah, just from there consistently was, you know, 8 to
see now the thing is I know all of these things without even having to look at the sheet because he was messaging me about it. Yeah, that's right. Living rent free in Bruce's head. When he found out that he was like, "Oh, so you guys are actually going to do this. Like you're not just joking." And then all of a sudden the smart people started paying attention. They're like, "Well, did you think about this? And what about this?" It's like, "Oh yeah, yeah, now that you know that two idiots are going to get together on a podcast and try to dunk on you." How are you doing this? You're concerned now that there's a little skin in the game. A newcomer to the podcast game, Jake Cranston. He did well. He gave it the old college try. And as a newcomer to this, I'll give him something of a pass for his 268-point score. I will. I think it's respectable, especially for someone who's getting into this and someone who's trying to balance, like, hey, I want to do something. I want to mock drafts are popular. I'm going to put this out there. I'm going to start collaborating with other people. Like, it's a good thing, and he really tried. He made some mistakes. I mean, mistakes were made, but some of them were the same mistakes other people made. You know, putting Owusu-Koramoah in the first round, Ojulari, like, Osai might have been his biggest mistake. And outside of that, and had it not been for that, he would have been fine. He actually probably would have finished right down around Elf and Bruce and the rest of these guys. I mean, yes, he did draft 6 players who ultimately went in the second round. I love that's not his words here.
Marshall at the end of the first round.
There's a reach.
To Baltimore. That was a big reach. That was a big miss.
But the important thing that he can hang his hat on here is that he didn't lose. He didn't lose. No. And that brings us to tonight's winner and loser. The loser of the first ever 2021 Mocking the Mock Drafts, Cover One's Greg Thompson with a score of 296.
Wow, you suck at this.
It's kind of funny when you think that somehow in trying to prognosticate 7 rounds of Bill's picks, he scored approximately half of what he did just trying to pick 32. That pretty much everyone agrees, like, half of these we already know about. Literally half of the score. Trying to draft guys for a full draft, he somehow did better than the first round. Am I crazy for laughing at that?
No. I'm just getting a whole kick. I'm picturing Greg. I know Greg well, just like you guys do. And I've talked to him many times, and he's so going back to this whole premise of your exercise, mocking the mocks that you do and making fun of the mock drafts, Greg losing gives what you do credibility, because Greg is a very smart, educated Buffalo Bills fan who spends a lot of time getting to know these prospects. I don't want to say like necessarily studying film, but certainly reads up on these prospects and spends a lot of time watching highlight tapes and things like that. So he puts together well-informed opinions, and to see him bomb and get beat like this and finish dead last, it does lend credibility to your theory of just how stupid mock drafts end up ultimately being.
I mean, and it's not his fault. I mean, it kind of is. He took seven players that went in the second round. He was the only one to take offensive tackle Sam Cosmi. Nobody else but him picked that. He's the cheese stands alone on that one. I mean, look at this, Chris. Another one of the quote-unquote smart people brought down by a simple mock draft. If I know Greg, he's going to drown his sorrow over his loss in a 16 ounces of prime ribeye. But the shame will hopefully make it taste like choice.
Fool this man!
And that brings us to tonight's winner, Mr. Andy Anderson.
Who the hell is that?
And that's the question I've been asking myself all week. Who the hell is this guy? The Bills-related person who scored the best in the mock draft challenge? Not a reporter with team access who studies football for a living? Not a podcaster who spends hours of his free time poring over football data and researching the draft? Not one of the smart people. Just a regular friggin' guy with a simple algorithm on the draftnetwork.com who happens to study and work in the field of Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Pat, isn't there something deliciously poetic about that?
Well, first and foremost, when I looked at your chart and I saw the name Andy Anderson, I went scrambling around. I'm like, who is Andy Anderson? I started looking for podcasters and blogs, and then I'm looking on my Twitter, and the name sounded familiar to me, but I couldn't connect this guy being with anybody because ultimately, obviously, he wasn't. Yeah, this is really cool, actually. I'm looking at this, that a fan ended up winning this contest. I'll tell you, he did well, and the first thing that really stands out to me is he's the only guy I could see, at least on this list anyway, or if not the only, one of the very few who did not take JOK in the first round of his mock draft. So he didn't get hit with that 35 points that a lot of people did. He did not take, I don't think he took Ojulari. No, he didn't take Ojulari in the first round. So those are two guys just right there alone. That's 50, 60 points that a lot of people took, one, if not both those guys that really suffered. And to Andy Anderson's credit, man, he didn't take either of them. But maybe to me, the most impressive thing of all is, so when the Raiders, probably the biggest shock of the first round, I think, to the smart, and I'm using air quotes here, the smart football fan, is when the Raiders came up and they took Alex Leatherwood with, I think it was pick 18. Nobody really saw that coming, but.
Well, I mean, it's Mike Mayock and the Raiders. I mean, nobody.
Yeah. So I look at I look at Andy Anderson's mock, and he had him going one pick later. So that wasn't a surprise to him whatsoever.
I don't know if you can even call it that. I mean, who knew, unless you were somebody who really, really was petty or really had a low opinion of the Raiders, could you have prognosticated that they would trade up for Alex Leatherwood?
Yeah.
No, nobody's doing that. And this is just it. It underscores my belief that this is less a science and more like picking the NCAA tournament brackets, and that the more you know, the more likely you are to probably lose to the girl who picked her teams based on how many of her ex-boyfriend's names are loosely associated with the schools and their uniform colors. Like, that's it. You're probably going to get beat by that person the more you try to educate yourself on this. And
right.
So in that way, taking any of this too seriously, not the contents of the class. You know, Chris, that's why I love what we do over here. We sit down with the analysts and we pick their brains about the quality of the position groups, the different players that, you know, maybe we have an affinity for. trying to figure out what the constitution of the class is as a whole. But thinking, you know, but kind of getting away from this idea that you can prognosticate any of it with any sort of degree of accuracy. It's not only flawed, but it's hilarious. It's a hilarious concept. I know I can't stop people from doing it, but I want you all to know that, rest assured, we will be here waiting to deliver accountability. We will be here. Now, I reached out to Andy. He was, first of all, shocked that he won. He was like, what are you talking about? Yeah. So I explained it to him, and I asked him to give me a victory speech. Because what good is winning if you can't take a victory lap and rub it in the faces of the people you beat? I don't know if I need to tell you guys this, if you haven't already been able to tell from years of listening to our podcast. I'm not only a sore loser, I'm also a sore winner. Like, that's just, I just believe in that. So this is Andy Anderson's victory speech. I clearly am Bills Mafia Nostradamus. So I'm predicting Josh Allen breaks his records from last year. The defense is back to 2019 form, and they blow out every playoff opponent celebrating a Super Bowl victory, celebrating a Super Bowl victory midway through the third quarter. They will beat the brakes off Miami in the divisional, which is a hot take, and sack Mahomes five times in the AFC Championship game, finally shutting out the Rams in the Super Bowl. Hey, I love the confidence. I love the fact that he goes, I'm Nostradamus. I know what I'm talking about. You guys are dumb. Here's what I think. And the funny thing about his statement there is that I know a lot of smart people who would scoff at that idea. But they clearly can't mock draft worth a damn. So what do they know? Certainly not enough to question Bill's Nostradamus.
Yeah,
and I will drink
Andy,
to that.
Maybe Andy should have quit when he was ahead and that's mocking the mocks. But yeah, you're right. And by the way, one thing I was wrong about, he did take Ogilary. So that was the one thing that he was entirely off about. But yeah, overall, my biggest takeaway from looking at your spreadsheet and what goes into like the key to winning for future years, the Rock Pile Report, mocking the mock contests, is it's all about picks like 20. From 22 on, it seems like that's where the majority of the damage is done. That's where if you could get yourself in that like 3 to 8 point at worst range, you're pretty good. You're going to score well. Whereas the people who did really poorly, like Chris Sims and Greg, they really tanked it really bad after like between like picks like 22 to 30, 31. That's where they took their beatings.
I love that you subconsciously knew to end with Greg. And not go, Greg and Ben, all Greg and Chris Sims. You started Chris Sims and ended with Greg. I don't know. It just made me feel good. Like, I love it.
One quick little side note, too, about Ben Albright. I talked to him after the draft, and he still, to this moment, is convinced that had Travis Etienne not what many people thought was going to Jacksonville, surprisingly, at 25, he's still confident, despite the fact the way the draft ended up going for the Bills, taking two defensive ends for the future. He still is quite confident that the Bills would have drafted Travis Etienne had he been on the board at 30.
And that's part of this speculation process that we'll never know. What I do know is that a complete nobody just blew out the field in terms of Buffalo Bills mock drafters. Andy, we raise a glass to you. I'll drink. Chris, we drink to the man. And so there you have it, folks. The end of this phase of the NFL season. And that is, unless you listen to our podcast every week, we've got a summer full of shenanigans and bullshit planned. We're going to be chatting with my one-time arch nemesis and former Bills media member, Jerry Sullivan. We're going to teach the guys from After the Snap, Reed and Blake Ferguson, a thing or two about podcasting.
That's going to be weird that you're going to teach them about podcasting.
Yeah. Hey, I'm shaping the minds of America's youth.
Why don't you just stick to doing that with your own kid?
We're going to have our first ever series of live podcasts planned, so keep an eye out for that. We're going to have some crossover episodes with Buffalo's best podcasters covering everything from more of our shenanigans and petty behavior, grilling tips, Bill's roster talk. Fight the urge to check out, okay? I promise, if nothing else, we're going to make you laugh, we'll have some sports content, and we'll get you over the hump here in the summer.
And it's going to start next week, because next week, Pat, and I don't know if you know this, is our 300th episode.
Really?
Yes.
That's awesome.
300 podcasts. We're going to ring it in style. Pat, before we get out of here, where can everybody find you on social, and where can they find you find your website?
Well, you know, normally I would give all that information and yada, yada, yada. You know, go check out Talking Buffalo Podcast. But I invite everyone to go find this Andy Anderson guy on Twitter and go follow him, because I think I'm going to do that.
Give him a congratulations. I want you all to tweet. On behalf of the Rock Bottom Report, I want everybody listening to this to go to Twitter, find Andy Anderson, and tweet him a congratulations.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
He's more than earned it. Guys, this has been fun, but we got to get the hell out of here. I'm Drew Geer. That's Chris Krueger. That's Pat Moran. And this has been your Rock Pile Report.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.